KPCC's podcasts are supported by Harvey Mudd College, where engineering, science, and mathematics are informed by the liberal arts. Students and faculty working together to solve problems and serve society. Online at hmc.edu.
Expect and have come to rely upon every day. You're also helping us fulfill this challenge.
Which is a huge one, but we are on track to fulfill it if you act right now. We haven't reached the goal yet. We haven't reached the challenge fulfillment. We have 54 minutes now in which to do it. But your faithfulness makes it all possible. You're leveraging $25,000, which is huge, to KPCC. You can think about all the things it can buy, from microphones to the studio usage that we have, the research that we need, and all the subscriptions that go with that. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. And the great thing, Mindy, thing I love about public radio is that every listener's gift, regardless of how much it is so key to fulfilling our obligation to serve listeners.
Absolutely. Please don't for a minute think that your individual $10 monthly gift is insignificant. It is hugely significant. It gets thrown into the bucket with every other member's dollars. And it is what allows us to bring you this kind of programming. Depti Shind from Pasadena renewed because independent news and thought need to continue. Thanks so much. Victoria Chia, brand new member from Knoxville, Tennessee.
She's
listening online wherever you are this morning, listening to Air Talk. Please click and join now or call and join at 866-888-5722.
Your support is so absolutely vital. And the great thing in these tough economic times, when maybe you're prioritizing, you're figuring out how to manage your budget, that you can give what's the right level for you to KPCC. You determine what the value of this service is, and then according to your means, you decide what's the right amount to give. And isn't that great? I mean, you can't do that with subscriptions to most things.
You try that with your cable TV, you're going to lose it.
They're not saying, well, you know, I don't use it that much. I'm going to pay less this month. No, you can't do that. But KPCC, this opportunity is here for you. There's no reason for you not to give if you'll allow the double negative. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. Let's stay on track. $25,000 is at stake here. We know you'll do the right thing and be faithful. Thanks for your support.
Local broadcast of StoryCorps is supported by the Capital Group Companies, based in Los Angeles since 1931. The Capital Group and its associates are proud to support StoryCorps, helping Americans share their stories. Online at capgroup.com.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. When we have in-studio guests during our fund drives, it's so interesting to see their responses. They watch the fundraising go back and forth, and it's so different than the typical interview that you have on radio or television where it's business as usual. We are passionate about what we do and care about serving you with information that we think is important, as well as entertaining. And you might think it odd that a book having to do with the battle over foie gras is highly entertaining, but it really is. It's a serious topic, one with well-intentioned peoples on multiple sides, and a very entertaining war it is. Mark Caro is author of The Foie Gras Wars, How a 5,000-Year-Old Delicacy Inspired the World's Fiercest Food Fight. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Mark's a longtime Chicago Tribune reporter, and in fact, his writing on the foie gras controversy sparked the feud to an even higher level. He has been a recipient of a James Beard Foundation Award and Association of Food Journalists Honors for his writing on this very topic. Mark, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
So you're the guy who touched off this whole thing.
Well, it had kind of been touched off already, but I definitely inadvertently was involved in the throwing of gasoline onto this. How was that first phrase?
Yeah,
inadvertently
fat
involved
onto the fire
in the throwing
here.
On. Yes. Yeah. Well, what happened was this. I write for the Chicago Tribune. I write mostly entertainment stuff, mostly about pop culture. I had written some food-related stories as well. And I was told that Charlie Trotter, who's one of the top chefs in Chicago, if not the country or the world, had quit serving it. In fact, he said he'd quit serving it 3 years earlier, but he was just telling people now. So I put a call into him, and he said, you know, this is just something we can't abide. I can't abide it anymore. You know, the ducks, they suffer too much. I mean, how foie gras is made is there's a tube stuck down a duck or a goose's throat, almost always a duck now. And they're fed a couple times a day for a 2 to 3 week period. And the feedings take a few seconds of time and they're filled up and their livers grow to like 8 to 10 times their normal size. And his feeling was that there are too many other good things to eat and we don't need to see animals suffer this way. Now, Charlie Trotter, mind you, had a book out called Charlie Trotter's Meat and Game that had come out in 2001, the year before he said he quit serving it. And there are 14 foie gras recipes in there. There are pictures of him on foie gras farms
so he had an epiphany,
with little duckies. Clearly. So clearly he sort of had an evolution on this. And he was one of the biggest sellers of foie gras in the country. But anyway, he decided that he said, no, this is no good. And I talked to a bunch of other chefs in Chicago. And one of them, Rick Tremonto from a restaurant called True, said, you know, it's kind of hypocritical. Either you raise an animal to kill him and eat him or you're not. When I went back to Trotter, he's like, well, you know, Rick Tremonto's not the smartest guy on the block. He can't be that dumb, is he? I mean, it's just kind of an idiot comment. Oh, just because they're raising him doesn't mean they should have to suffer. Maybe we should serve up Rick's liver for a little treat. It's certainly fat enough. So I'm listening to this going, oh, my God, you have like the two top chefs in Chicago, and one of them's threatening to eat the other one's liver.
And you ran with the story.
I ran with the story, absolutely. And I thought, oh, I wonder if you just put this on page one. But the interesting thing was that I realized that there was again, it's the funny and the serious. That's kind of funny, you know, eating someone's liver, you know, maybe you don't think it's funny. But
yeah, does Trotter have a smile on his face when he said it?
He was on the phone, but he has this kind of steely demeanor all the time. I mean, even when he's joking, he kind of doesn't really grin or smile. So he's a pretty tough guy to read in general. But I realized that this all this stuff had gone on in California already, where you guys have banned it as of 2012. But this happened at the end of 2004, so this is just a few months before I did this. And, you know, there were a lot of controversies elsewhere about this. And you know, the foie gras industry in the U.S. was really just three farms. And they say, we're not really an industry. They're just three farms. We produce 500,000 ducks a year, which is about the same number of chickens that one factory farm will do in a day.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like foie gras is a nightly meal for most Americans.
Yeah,
this is a high-end specialty.
No, I mean, to put it in perspective, there are 9 billion chickens produced every year for us to eat and 500,000 foie gras ducks in the U.S. So it's a big difference. But so I wrote about this whole thing and it kind of got at the serious issues, but also the chef wars. And I mean, I'm someone who's written about, I mean, I've interviewed, you know, Tom Cruise a couple times and I've covered the Oscars and, you know, talked to Nicole Kidman and Halle Berry and Steven Spielberg and Michael Jordan and whoever. And I go and write a story about duck livers, and that's the one that explodes, and that's the one that everyone responds to. And, you know, page 6 of the New York Post is writing about how Trotter's a hypocrite because some chef served foie gras in his kitchen a few weeks earlier, and Newsweek is chiming in, and the New York Times is chiming in, and a Tribune columnist is writing about Hannibal Trotter, and all these people are writing these letters, and letters are pouring in, and, like, not that many people eat the stuff, but they just hit this chord, which really has to do with, I think, how we, you know, our mixed feelings about how we treat food animals. And one of the people who read the story was Joe Moore, who's an alderman in Chicago. He didn't do any other research. He read the story, proposed the ban in Chicago. And a year later, Chicago was banning foie gras, and you got foie gras duckiesies popping out and foie gras
so prohibition. Under the table foie gras?
Under the table foie gras, you know, the secret code word. I actually went to this one club called Turtle Soup. And you would go to this dinner at a restaurant. They would it was like a private thing, and they would serve you like a 4-course foie gras dinner. And at the end of the night, they give you a card with turtle soup on it. And you would go into one of the participating restaurants and say, "I'll have the turtle soup," you know, and maybe give a little wink as you handed it to the, you know, the waiter, the server, and then they would say, "We'll see." And then they would come back and they'd bring you a foie gras appetizer. I did this once and the guy had no idea what
you were talking about. You have to have a sense of the absurd for this.
Clearly. Oh, absolutely. No, actually, the funny thing was that they didn't have any foie gras in the kitchen and they went in the back and they had a panic. And I only found out about this afterwards. They called the chef at another restaurant who was at a Chicago Bulls game, who the owner of this restaurant went over to his restaurant, went into his walk-in, found a foie gras tureen that was hanging there. Or a torchon that was hanging there, brought it back and presented it and served it just because we had this card. It was like the all-powerful turtle soup card.
Amazing. The foie gras wars, how a 5,000-year-old delicacy inspired the world's fiercest food fight. So what Mark Caro did was visit places where the ducks and geese are cultivated. He saw the whole process of the force feeding and tried foie gras in many, many different environments, but had a chance to really delve into the process and to see what are the pros and the cons of foie gras being cultivated and being served to Americans in high-end restaurants. We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. You can also share your comments on the AirTalk blog, kpcc.org. Great chance for you to ask questions about foie gras it's raising, it's the serving of it, and also to chime in on the foie gras wars. 866-893-KPCC. So share with us about your travels, because you not only covered this country at the, what is it, three spots where foie gras is raised, but also Europe.
Right. Yeah, in the U.S., you have Sonoma foie gras, which was the first one I went to, which is a El Salvadoran immigrant named Guillermo Gonzalez, who runs it. That's the one in California, so that's the one that's at risk now with this ban that takes place in a few years. And then in New York State, there's Hudson Valley foie gras, which is the biggest, which is run by two Israeli immigrants who actually didn't know each other, but they, you know, one of them is the farmer and one of them is the guy who really promotes it. Then there's one just a mile away called La Belle, which they had me out there and then wouldn't let me see anything and lawyered up and were very uncooperative, actually. And then there's also a little one that I discovered called Au Bon Canard, which is in Minnesota, and they just do it sort of locally. So, but it's the three main ones in the U.S. Okay. And then I went to about six or seven in France. And it's in the U.S., one of the things that distinguishes how it's done in the U.S. is that a lot of times when you see videos of this, you will see the ducks in individual cages, and they can't move over, they can't turn around at all. And it's pretty disturbing imagery, which is one of the reasons it's used in these videos. If you go to Canada, if you go to France, the so-called industrial way of doing it, they put them in that because they're faster to feed that way. In the U.S., the ducks are actually kept in these pens that are maybe 4x6, 4x10, depending on the number of ducks that are in there. They do have room to move. The first 12 weeks of their life, like at Sonoma foie gras, they're outside free range in any way, or they're in barns at Hudson Valley. And then they're in these pens, and someone comes in with a milk crate twice a day. They have a sort of a funnel or some sort of a tube. It has a corn-based feed. They basically take the duck between their legs, put the head up, drop the tube down the beak. It goes zzzz, and about 5 to 8 seconds, basically they fill up with corn from sort of the base of their crop or their stomach or whatever you'd call it up through their esophagus, and then they let them go. And the ducks really don't react particularly, And I thought that they would, and I thought it would be more dramatic. And part of the difficulty of this is that the actual process to watch up close is sort of mundane, and it might be because ducks aren't a particularly expressive animal. But if you looked at the ducks that had just been fed and the ones that were just about to be fed, there really was no perceptible difference. And now I talk to veterinarians who are against foie gras. I say, look, you know, a duck is a prey animal. They don't show you how they're suffering. So they really, you know, are suffering, but
it's all internalized.
They're just trained not to. You know, on the other hand, you know, when you see with your eyes and it's being described to you as torture, it looks like farming. And that's not to say that you don't see ducks on the end of it who are really pretty fat and some of them who have trouble walking around. But in terms of it being a high percentage and what a percentage is acceptable.
Or comparing it to, you know, how other animals are farmed. I mean, is that not the other issue to put this in a bigger context?
Yeah, I mean, to me, there are two main questions, and one doesn't negate the other. One is it really worse than, you know, the production of what we all eat? And it's interesting to me that I was able to go on all these foie gras farms, and, you know, Hudson Valley is very open to have visitors and give tours. But if you want to see how the chicken that you eat every single day is produced and you call one of those producers, they will say no and they'll give you reasons having to do with insurance or something or other. But, you know, there's no transparency in the stuff we eat every day. And at the same time, it means that it's easier for people to rally against the treatment of a duck, and we like ducks, you know, who's getting a pipe stuck down its throat, which people think, ugh, that's
awful. It sounds very bad.
It sounds terrible. You're making their liver big, and people don't like liver anyway. It's French, and we don't like French, you know. I mean, and this was happening also, you know, in the days of the freedom fries, mind you. And, you know, it is expensive, and so it's rich people, and we don't like it. So there are all sorts of reasons that people can get, you know, mad about this, and it's not to say those reasons aren't bad, but there are other things going on that a lot of the activists will say, well, this is equally bad. But the question is, even if other things are as bad, does that mean that foie gras is okay?
Yeah, right. Does it get a pass just because we have less than optimal conditions for raising animals as food? We're talking with Mark Caro. He's the author of The Foie Gras Wars, How a 5,000-Year-Old Delicacy Inspired the World's Fiercest Food Fight. A little bit later, we'll tell you about the very earliest depictions of foie gras, because it goes back to early Egypt. And we'll also talk about more about how these farms farms are operated and what legal action and statutes have been passed in various parts of the country. If you've called in to talk with our guest, please stay on the line. Please be patient. We'll continue with this conversation in just minutes. Our phone lines are open for your comments at 866-893-KPCC.
My name's Janet Ingram, and I'm a proud member of KPCC. When I first came to the States, I missed the BBC terribly, but that's just not true anymore. But whereas the BBC is kept in business by the government, public radio needs your support. It's easy to take KPCC for granted. I had been, but I do know how much I rely on it and how much I love it. Donating gave me a connection to the station, and I just want to encourage all you listeners to join, support this great radio station.
This is Air Talk on 89.3. Larry Mantle with longtime Air Talk producer Mindy Steinman. We have just, we're hoping, 39 minutes remaining in today's Air Talk and KPCC fundraising.
And you actually have the power to allow fundraising to come to an end today at 12 noon. Fundraising for the day, that is, of course. When we get 150 more members by noon today, we are allowed to end fundraising for the day and also to accept $25,000 from our board chair, Gordon Crawford.
KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. That's where you make your contribution right now so that we fulfill the $25,000 challenge, so that we bring today's fundraising to a close at noon. 38 minutes remaining, we hope, because you're the one who makes it possible. If you're one of the 150, we do this one membership at a time with your support.
Think of all the power you have during this power block. You have the power to allow fundraising to come to an end just for the day at noon. You have the power to allow us to accept $25,000. And also, of course, you have the power to make KPCC even better because of your donation in the days and weeks to come.
We appreciate your support. You understand what public radio is about. And in many cases, you don't have time to sit down, read a newspaper, or watch television, but you have to stay informed. So KPCC doesn't waste your valuable time with filler news or with fluff.
One of the many reasons you listen, in fact, that's the reason Elizabeth Kaufman in LA became a new member. She said, "I almost donated my member to a magazine giving in-depth coverage of Katie Holmes' hairstyle and J-Lo's marital status, but then I decided KPCC needed it more." And she says, of course, seriously, she depends on KPCC for all her news and for passing the hours in the day. She's more
well informed.
Now,
we're doing the Katie Holmes segment tomorrow on
Air
Talk, just so you know. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. Do your fair share at KPCC.org. You turn to 89.3 because you want factual information, you want context, you want analysis, you want something that's worthy of your consideration, not just an emotional response.
Right. We're not fluff. We're not sound bites. We're in-depth analysis, context, and all sides of an issue. We never tell you what to think. We just give you plenty to think about. Think about becoming a member.
Well, and the foie gras wars is a perfect example.
Exactly.
That's the tone Mark Caro takes in his book. He's a journalist trying to figure out, all right, what are these different sites saying? What's accurate? What's not? Where do people's emotions come into play? What are very rational conclusions about the treatment of animals? And how should our laws reflect that? All these complexities of an issue that typically don't get discussed. He's done it in his book, The Foie Gras Wars, which we have available online for your contribution of $15 a month, the KPCC at kpcc.org. But it's what we do as our bread and butter on Air Talk as well. So support the program, please, and make sure we bring today's fundraising to a close in 36 minutes. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722.
My name is Violetta, and I live in Pasadena. I've never driven as much as I drive here. When I lived in Paris, I used to take public transportation, and I could read a book, I could listen to music. And here, when you drive, you really can't distract yourself. You have to stay focused. And in LA, your car is your life. And I couldn't be in my car if I didn't have KPCC. I depend on it. You can always rely on it for accurate, non-biased information. And anyone can be a member. You just go to kpcc.org and you just click. It's as easy as that. Or you can call 1-866-888-5722.
All right. We appreciate it, Violetta. Beautifully said. KPCC.org. Mindy, where do we stand on bringing today's fundraising to a close?
125 members left to hear from by noon today in order to accept a very generous $25,000 gift from our board chair, Gordon Crawford, and to bring fundraising to a close at noon today. Fundraising free afternoon and evening if we get 121 members on board in the family by noon.
KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. Your contribution right now does multiple things. It brings today's fundraising to a close at noon when we reach our threshold, and it fulfills Gordon Crawford, the president of our board's incredibly generous challenge of $25,000. If you've been listening throughout the morning, you've been hearing how we're building up to it. Well, now the culmination is nigh. We are 34 minutes away from reaching the deadline. The clock is running, and that should prompt you right now to say, I better do it. I've been waiting this morning. I've been hearing. And how are things going for KPCC? They're going okay, but we still have a ways to go. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722, 119 to go.
And we need you to be the very next member, allowing us to get that much closer to this goal of $25,000, the challenge laid down by Board Chair Gordon Crawford. It comes with a caveat. We've got to bring in these members by noon today in order to accept this very, very generous offer. Donate whatever amount is right for you. If $10 a month is right for you and your family's budget, it's right for us. KPCC.org.
One of the ways we'd love to thank you is with this great brand new double CD set from National Public Radio. It's NPR Driveway Moments celebrating moms and motherhood, and we'll even get it to you in time for Mother's Day to give your mom a nice gift. Now, if she listens to KPCC and you don't show up at her house on Mother's Day or at the restaurant with this CD, what will she think? KPCC.org. That was a low blow on Mike. I'm sorry.
Hey,
that
guilt
crosses,
works.
That crosses the line. I'm very sorry. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. Bad host. This is Air Talk on KPCC.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by Pasadena's Kids Space Children's Museum, home of Caterpillar Adoption Days starting March 12th. KidSpace has interactive indoor and outdoor environments where learning and play come together through the arts, sciences, and humanities. You can adopt a caterpillar and discover the science of metamorphosis at KidSpace Children's Museum or by visiting online at kidspacemuseum.org.
Who knew that a little duck or goose liver that is so delicious could be such a problem? But in his new book, The Foie Gras Wars, Chicago Tribune journalist Mark Caro beautifully lays out what all the complexities are of the raising of foie gras and why so many people think it's a very bad idea to treat the ducks and geese in the way necessary to fatten their livers to serve the delicacy. The book is subtitled How a 5,000-Year-Old Delicacy Inspired the World's Fiercest Food Fight. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Now, I understand we don't have cave paintings of people fattening up ducks for foie gras, but it's close.
Close to it. I mean, yeah, in ancient Egypt, the days of the pharaoh, there are wall paintings that show someone taking some sort of nugget or something and putting it down into a goose's mouth and putting it down the throat. It goes back supposedly 5,000 years. And was it done because they originally knew that the liver was going to be so delicious? I think that geese, which is what it was done with then, and ducks, they store fat under their skins and in their livers. So this became very handy when you wanted to cook with fat because you didn't have any Crisco back then. So a lot of times these geese would be fattened so that you could cook with the fat and then also eat the meat and then also eat the liver. For hundreds of years, the Jewish people are considered to have or thought to have actually carried on the foie gras tradition, because while they were busy getting kicked out of countries and going away from the land of olive oil into more the land of where people cooked with pig fat or beef fat, which really wasn't kosher, they would take the geese with them, and they were called walking larders, they called them.
Oh.
And that was the way that they were able to cook kosher, and also they had the livers, which they would, I mean, there's a theory that chopped liver actually is a derivative of foie gras. So this moved through Europe and eventually entered into France around Alsace and went from the north east corner of the country down to the southwest, where it became sort of the domain of, you know, the grandma who would, you know, feed her own goose, and the family would, you know, the tradition was the family would keep the goose, and they keep the meat, and they would sell the liver at market. And in the meantime, when restaurants came around and sort of replaced the whole idea of just everything was royal, but now people could go into restaurants in Paris. There were French chefs who discovered it, and there was kind of an explosion of the culinary side of it as well. And so it has this long tradition of, you know, going from something that was maybe more utilitarian to something that became this real luxury.
It's foie gras and matzo. It's sort of an interesting
exactly
the culinary contributions of Jewish culture. Not to forget chicken noodle soup. Yeah.
Oh, there are so many contradictions here too. Where, I mean, the biggest foie gras farm in the U.S. is run in Hudson Valley, like I said, by two Israelis, and Israel actually banned foie gras a few years ago through a Supreme Court decision. Even though foie gras there was, I mean, it was actually kosher. I mean, it was certified kosher, and it was more for an animal rights argument than for anything else. So Israel is one of the few places that produced it that also has banned it.
We're talking with Mark Caro. He is the author of The Foie Gras Wars, How a 5,000-Year-Old Delicacy Inspired the World's Fiercest Food Fight. Love to hear your questions and comments. We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, or you can contribute your comments to the Air Talk blog at kpcc.org. When you witnessed the tubal feedings of the ducks, did the ducks actually, you know, come toward the tube like, oh, it's feeding time?
Right.
Or did they like, start to, you know, I don't want that thing put down my throat? Or was there no response?
It's funny because I'd heard both. I mean, you hear the legendary, the ducks actually go to the feeder and are like, feed me, please, you know, put the tube down my throat. That did not happen. But the other thing that did not happen was what's widely described on the animal rights side, which is that they're climbing over each other with their broken, tattered wings, trying desperately to get out of the pen. And it's not either. It's not a pronounced thing, at least what I saw. And again, I saw it at farms here where they knew I was coming. I saw it at French farms where they were on the, I pulled off from the side of the road and they said, hey, you want to watch me feed my ducks? I'd say, sure. You know, a bird is not a cat. And it's not a domestic animal. And when you go into a pen, it's going to move away from you. And they don't like to be grabbed. Now, do they not like to be grabbed because they don't want to be fed, or just because they don't like to be grabbed? I mean, my cat sits on my lap and purrs. But if I sit down and reach for her, most of the time she'll run away anyway. So there's some avoidance, but it's not an avoidance is often seen as like one of the signs of their distress. But it's not such a dramatic avoidance like, oh my God, they really have to get out of the grasp. And in some of the farms, you know, this goose farm I went to that was just run by this family, I mean, it was very calm. The whole thing was calm. So they weren't flocking to the tube, but they weren't desperate to get away from it.
And is there any way to measure the physical discomfort that you saw, you know, late in life for the birds once they've put on significant weight?
There have been studies done to try to measure this. They've been criticized. A lot of them are in France because there's money to study these things and because it's such a bigger industry there. And in France, a lot of the funding is funded in part by the industry, and so that's why it gets criticized. But there are measures of the hormones that you find in the duck stools and other things, and they would show that there was no elevated stress level where in other stressful situations there was an elevated level of this hormone. And so they feel like scientifically there have been all these papers written that say they don't show any, you know, scientific level of stress. Now, again, there are plenty on the other side who debunk this. They say, look, this is just the industry's tools.
Well, have they done their own studies, though, that do show the elevated stress?
You know, I haven't the argument has been more, I mean, I talked to someone who's involved in this European Union study that was kind of that was critical of foie gras, and he said the problem is that you can't really measure stress in the way that they're measuring it, that there's no scientific way to show you how a duck feels. And one of the main arguments is they'll say, look, use your common sense. Of course, if it's heavier and everything, it's going to be feeling discomfort. But then the other side says, well, no, you know, that's an emotional argument. You're anthropomorphizing, but there's nothing to indicate it. There are plenty of studies of ducks that have been taken out of foie gras farms that have problems with them, and, you know, and they'll list these, you know, long, these necropsies with these long lists of problems. But like for me as a writer, it was hard to separate it and say, well, okay, but is this I mean, you could go into a hospital and pull out, you know, go see 1,000 patients and pull out two that look really bad and say these have all these horrible problems. But does that mean that systematically there's a problem in this hospital or there's a problem with this sort of treatment? And so it's hard to pinpoint. I haven't seen a study that says this percentage of ducks that are in this situation are suffering to this degree. I saw some that were definitely hobbling. There are a lot that pant. It seems to be related to the temperature, though, because I was in one farm where the temperature literally went down like 12 degrees in an hour, and the ones that had been panting all of a sudden weren't panting. The ones that are, you know, limping, you do think, oh, that's bad, or maybe their feathers mm-hmm. don't look so great. But it wasn't a large percentage of them, and you know, again, I haven't been gone onto the chicken farm, but my impression is that it's not like, you know, on the chicken farm, everyone's okay and they have no mortality and no, you know, hobbled chickens.
The foie gras wars, how a 5,000-year-old delicacy inspired the world's fiercest food fight. Mark Caro is the author of the book. It's published by Simon & Schuster. He'll be signing copies of it tonight at 7 at Roman's Books on Colorado Boulevard in Pasadena. I'd love to hear your thoughts, whether you're someone who agrees with the animal rights perspective, that this is something that really needs to be stopped as part of a civilized culture, that we should not be force feeding ducks or geese, that this is not proper treatment for those animals, and you favor banning it. 866-893-KPCC. Or if you're someone who feels like, well, putting this in the broader context, there's nothing worse here than other methods that we use for farming animals for food, and that this would seem to be in the range of acceptability. 866-893-KPCC. Or maybe you're somewhere along that spectrum. Chance for you to weigh in or to contribute to the AirTalk blog at kpcc.org. How big an industry is foie gras in France?
In France, France makes the majority of the world's foie gras, and it's fairly big. I have some numbers on it, but it's something.
Is it
like
just
30...
high-end restaurants there, or you could go to McDonald's and get a foie gras burger?
Not only that. Well, I did not see a McFoie, but if you go into a gas station in Southwest France, they sell foie gras. There's like the wall of foie next to the wall of potato chips. It's just part of, you know, what they have. If you're in Champagne gas station, you'll get the champagne, and if you're in the Southwest or the Northeast,
I'll take the champagne caviar and foie gras.
Yeah, there's just you know, and it's like, oh, you get a little jar of pate or a jar of. You know, the whole liver, and it's just something that's part of the culture there. And so there's a little bit of that. You people are nuts there to be banning it because it's such this tradition. On the other hand, you know, in France, that kind of, you know, that artisan way of living is also disappearing like it is in the U.S. And so there are fewer farmers who are sort of keeping those small farms multi-generations. And there is some concern that at some point it's all going to be done more by the quote-unquote industry as opposed to being done by a little ma and pa. And once it's sort of more industrialized, that maybe people will be less for it. But they've actually protected it as part of the French patrimony. That's the word they use. And I think that they did that in part because they do feel like there is a certain threat on the animal rights side to people attacking foie gras, even in France.
All right. And just to clarify, you mentioned also purchasing pâté. Is pâté never foie gras, or sometimes is there
sometimes
foie gras?
Sometimes it's foie
pâté?
Gras. It's a very good question because a lot of people will say pâté and foie gras interchangeably. The way it is, if you're in France, a pâté is the foie gras mixed with other things. Like it might be mixed with duck meat or pork fat or pork meat or something like that. It's somewhat of a dilution of it. Whereas you will also a lot of times you'll get if you get a terrine or a torchon, that'll usually be just the liver itself, and it seems like pâté because it's so full of fat that it has that buttery texture. But in fact, it's not a pâté; it's the actual liver.
All right. We're talking with a Chicago Tribune journalist, Mark Caro. He's author of The Foie Gras Wars, How a 5,000-Year-Old Delicacy Inspired the World's Fiercest Food Fight. Charlie Trotter kicked things off at his signature Chicago restaurant, although he's part of a multi-city empire now. And from there, things really took off, banning of foie gras here in California to take effect in a few years. The city of Chicago banned it. It's been banned in Israel. What do you think? 866-893-KPCC. This is Air Talk on 89.3.
Hi, my name is Ford Phelps, and I'm a student at Brentwood School. I'm 12 years old, and I listen to KPCC every single morning. It's how I get my news, and I love all the programs like StoryCorps and everything on the weekend like Car Talk. and it's a great time for me to bond with my dad because I like to listen to it with him. And I'm a subscriber, and you can become a member too. Contribute online at kpcc.org or call 866-888-5722. Thank you.
We appreciate your support so much. Larry Mantle with longtime Air Talk producer Mindy Steinman. We lost her to D.C., but she's back for our member drive. And we are hopefully 20 minutes away from today's fundraising coming to a close and 20 minutes away from $25,000 thanks to our generous SCPR board chairman, Gordon Crawford.
So let's reset. Gordon Crawford has offered us $25,000 if we manage to bring in 750 members by noon today. We are well on our way, but we still need to hear from 79 more new and renewing members in the next 20 minutes. That gets us to the ability to accept this very generous donation, and it also allows us to finish fundraising for the afternoon. Pat Morrison, All Things Considered, Marketplace, everything fundraising free for the rest of the day.
And President Obama's primetime news conference, which will be heard 5 on the West Coast. We'll have it for you in its entirety with NPR analysis 5 o'clock without interruption here on 89.3. So here's where we stand. As Mindy just said, we are so close yet so far. Like, isn't this the paradox of life? We have 19 minutes to hear from 79 Air Talk listeners becoming members. If you've put off your contribution, you said, I'm going to get to it. I've got a lot to do today. Don't put it off longer, because now is your chance to fulfill $25,000. How often can you say in your life that I help bring about $25,000 to help a cause I believe in?
If you've been waiting for the moment to have your dollars do the very most they can do, this is it. Your $89 perhaps for the entire year of membership not only supports the station, makes us stronger in the days and years to come, but it leverages $25,000, and it gives you a fundraising-free afternoon. You can't beat this.
KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. 75 members to go in 18 minutes. Thanks to Louis Levy of Los Angeles, renews his membership, says, KPCC is an invaluable resource. I listen every day for the best economic and political analysis on radio. All KPCC listeners need to do their part to support the station and ensure it remains the flagship of public radio in Southern California. Lewis, thank you for that generous support. KPCC.org.
You set the price. You think about how much you listen to KPCC and then decide what that's worth to you. Deborah and Oren Heller did just that. They renewed. They are in Southern California 5 months of the year, so they also contribute to their other station in Colorado, KUNC. They say they're addicted to KPCC here in the Southland. If you belong to another public radio station or a public broadcasting outlet, absolutely wonderful. You should donate to whatever you listen to, but you're listening now. That means we need you to become a member at KPCC.
You set the value. You determine how much you listen, what benefits you get from it, and what your means are. It's that simple. We're asking you right now, do it. Please don't put it off. KPCC.org. 66 members to go in 16 and a half minutes. KPCC.org. 866-888-5722. Zara and Fatima Movagar of Glendale renew their membership. Pick up the stainless steel water bottle for their $10 monthly gift. And Zara saying, I'm contributing so we can get back to regular programming as soon as possible. Zara, we agree. KPCC.org.
And we'll be able to do that at noon today for the rest of the day, fundraising free with your donation. Now, Hunter Betts is contributing so that his roommate, Kevin Finesk, will hear and decide to contribute as well. They both love KPCC, and it's time to get in the game, Kevin, says Hunter.
All right, KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. 63 members to go by noon today. We bring fundraising for the day to a close at that time if we hear from 63 more members and we fulfill a $25,000 challenge from our board president, Gordon Crawford. This is a great chance for you, a great opportunity for us, and collectively we make it possible. Thanks for your generous support. KPCC.org.
Hi, this is Renee Rivera. I've no time to read the paper or watch TV, so I turn to KPCC for informative, intelligent, balanced news. And since I'm in the car so much, I've become a KPCC news junkie. Even my 7 and 12-year-olds enjoy much of the programming, like This American Life, and we've had some great discussions. So thanks to you, KPCC, from me and my family for being an important part of our family and day.
To become a part of our family, just pick up the phone and dial 866-888-5722 or go to kpcc.org. And thanks.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle, Chicago Tribune journalist. Mark Caro, author of The Foie Gras Wars, How a 5,000-Year-Old Delicacy Inspired the World's Fiercest Food Fight, published by Simon & Schuster. He's at Roman's in Pasadena tonight at 7 o'clock. Celeste, in Yorba Linda, welcome to Air Talk.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Well, I just had a fundamental question is for your caller. Is how can we possibly apply indicators of human suffering to duck or goose suffering? And he mentioned that he has a cat, and, you know, as we know, cats purr when they're happy. Humans don't purr. Does that mean we're not happy? I just don't think it's applicable to apply human standards of suffering. We need a different litmus test for different animals.
What would it be for you, Celeste, if you were going to determine what you ate based on the way that the animal was prepared for slaughter? What would you be looking for?
I honestly think I'm not Jewish. I'm Catholic. But I really think kosher has a lot to do with it, that they say a prayer, they slit the animal's throat, not to be gross, but it's kind of quick and easy. It's not a sledgehammer and you're taking downers. Like, I really feel like we are part of the food chain, but as humane as we can make that reality, I'm all for it.
All right. Celeste, thanks for your call. Mark?
No, that's a really good question. And it's really interesting. And again, it opens all these cans of worms. For instance, with kosher, Hudson Valley foie gras is not kosher. The reason it's not kosher is because they stun the ducks before they slit the throats. And when they make kosher foie gras in France, most of the foie gras, they also make the same way, where they stun the ducks. And the kosher ones, they do not stun them. And that's actually controversial on the animal rights side, in that there are some animal rights people who will not buy kosher because of that, even though kosher was a way of, you know, creating a system where there is more consideration for the animal. So there's all this kind of gray area. In France, they make halal foie gras, too. And I said to the guy at Rougier, I said, well, how do you do that? He's like, well, you have to turn the duck's head toward Mecca when you slaughter them. So there are all these different standards applied to this. But no, it's a really good question of how, I mean, and a lot of the criticism of the anti-foie gras fight is that we're imposing our human preferences or our human feelings on what's happening to these ducks, and that when you know, if you put a tube down our throat, you would gag and have all these sorts of reactions, and so you think, oh my God, they're doing this to this animal. But, you know, a duck's esophagus is harder than ours. They breathe through kind of under the center of their tongue, so they still can breathe while the tube is down there. And again, biologically, they do store fat in different places. Now, does that mean they're enjoying it? You know, I don't know. But they're not reacting to it the way we would react to it.
Celeste, appreciate your call. Let's talk with Marjorie in Santa Monica. You're on Air Talk.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I respect what the other woman said, that we can't do human suffering, duck suffering. The animals are suffering. It is a disgusting practice. It is necessary. I'm happy to hear California banned it. But I'd like to know why there was this few years put on the ban. If it's wrong, let's stop it now. How did it happen that the few years got into that ban?
The few years was a compromise in the bill. Basically, there's one farmer. It's Sonoma Foie Gras. The farm itself is actually in Farmington, California. And there was a sense that he was being all of a sudden legislated out of existence for a product that's really legal almost everywhere else, certainly in the U.S., and as a compromise to give him a chance to either discover a quote-unquote humane way of producing foie gras or to find a way to transition his business, they built in this 7.5-year period. And so that's why they did that. I mean, if you listen to the hearings, and I mean, I have recordings of all this stuff, I mean, there was even then, there were people who had gone to visit the farm who said, look, I've seen his practices and they're actually good agricultural practices and the animals there aren't suffering in any particular way. And then there were others who said, no, this is just a horrible practice and we have to ban it. It wasn't like there was a consensus agreement in the state of what to do here.
Marjorie's other point that this is a disgusting practice, at least as you're describing it, and from what you see, I mean, it doesn't sound disgusting the way you're just, were you disgusted by what you saw?
At the risk of sounding like a bad person, I wasn't particularly, but I wasn't. Everything is manipulated. I mean, the way that we manipulate chickens so that they grow fat and so that we're slaughtering them at 6 to 7 weeks as opposed to, you know, more than twice that in like the 1950s, you know, the way that we treat chickens so that they lay, you know, hens so that they lay eggs so quickly, or cows so that they produce so much milk. There's manipulation on every level of, you know, the agriculture food chain. Now, does that make it right? Does that make it okay? I don't know. I mean, the people who are against foie gras, I mean, the real campaigners on this from Farm Sanctuary, HSUS, the Humane Society, PETA, their general perspective is that none of that is okay, that, you know, it's more consistent and more humane to be a vegan, and that, in fact, the foie gras is to them an egregious example of these other things that we accept much more readily. And so, I mean, there are a lot of activists who will say, look, the treatment of, you know, the hens that lay your eggs is probably longer and more, you know, and worse than the treatment of these foie gras ducks. Now, does that make the treatment of the foie gras ducks okay? Not necessarily, but it's interesting where then it becomes a thing of, do you deal with everything at once? Did you just sort of deal with the, you know, the aspects where, you know, there are only three farms and they don't have as much, they can't fight back as much and people don't have anything invested in eating it, so we're okay to outlaw that one.
Well, I guess my point is, Marjorie saying that this is disgusting, this clearly, she finds this very offensive.
Right.
It disgusts her sensibilities that a tube would be forced down the fowl's throat for a force feeding and artificially enlarging the liver and making this obese fowl. Your response in seeing it sounds
right.
Like was not, you didn't recoil in disgust and go running out.
I mean, I fully expected to go there and go, oh, I'm never going to eat this again. I thought that the research for this book would be, you know, how I became really against it and how I, you know, became a vegetarian. And it's not like I was converted in the other direction either. But when you see it done, it takes a few seconds and the ducks don't really react. They are being tube fed, and that is an invasive thing, but it's not like they're being wounded, at least from what I was seeing. And, you know, being invaded, you know, having that as opposed to having hormones put in you, or, you know, being genetically manipulated, didn't seem to me like that was that
okay.
Much worse than that.
Let's talk with Jill in Hollywood. You're on Air Talk.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Jill.
Yes, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead. Need to get right to it, though.
Yes, absolutely. I just wanted to say that the earlier point about, you know, how do you measure an animal's suffering, because we can't, you know, really measure an animal's suffering, the best indicator, I think, is to look at what nature does. Nature, the animal eats, it stops when it's full. Anything that goes past that point, you have to assume they're suffering, just like when we eat or drink too much, and we're, not to be gross, but we're in the bathroom, we're miserable. That's just a basic common sense. If it goes against nature's dictates, there's going to be some suffering.
All right, Jill, thanks very much.
Yeah, but tell me this, though. Do you apply that to all food? Because nature does not dictate that chickens get so large so fast, or that they lay so many eggs, or the cows produce so much milk, or the cows get so fast. I mean, the way we produce food in this country to feed everyone at an affordable price, the factory farm method, is not nature.
I appreciate your call, Jill. Thank you very much. Let me share these two blogged comments at kpcc.org. This is from Sarah, who writes, "Foie gras is an amazing delicacy that's a joy to eat, like a deliciously meaty butter. There are so many worse things going on with our food supply. It's just silly to focus on a high-end luxury product." And this comes from Daniel, who also puts on the Air Talk blog, "What do I think? I think it's obvious. It's animal cruelty, morally unacceptable, socially acceptable. Go figure. I had a debate with a friend recently about whether or not animals have emotions. As I told her, go to the zoo and see for yourself. I just been to the zoo and watched the tenderness among the animals. I think it's indisputable. You can keep this going online on the AirTalk blog. We always appreciate your comments. A variety of perspectives makes for a lively debate on a topic like this. KPCC.org. Mark, thank you very much. Congratulations on the book. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Mark Carroll, he'll be at Roman's in Pasadena tonight at 7 o'clock. Chicago Tribune writer and author of The Foie Gras Wars, How a 5,000-Year-Old Delicacy Inspired the World's Fiercest Food Fight. Simon & Schuster, the publisher. Mindy Steinman, longtime AirTalk producer, is going to join me momentarily. It's AirTalk on KPCC.
We know money's tight now, so we especially appreciate every listener supporting KPCC. Like Michelle Gamrell of Pasadena, who just renewed her membership.
I wasn't going to renew my membership because money's super tight right now. I have a new baby, and since I'm self-employed, being on maternity leave means no income. But I'm an NPR junkie, and I love KPCC, so I just couldn't not support my station.
Thank you, Michelle, and thanks to all our listeners. Contribute now at kpcc.org.
Larry Mantle with Mindy Steinman, longtime AirTalk producer, back here for the final 5 minutes, hopefully, of today's on-air fundraising. It's 11:55 on the West Coast. We have 5 minutes left to fulfill a $25,000 challenge from the president of our Southern California Public Radio Board, Gordon Crawford.
$25,000 hangs in the balance. We still need to hear from 33 members in this last 5 minutes of AirTalk in order to make our overall goal for the day of 750 members. When that happens, if that happens in the next 5 minutes, we get to accept an extraordinarily generous offer of $25,000 from Gordy Crawford. But that's not all.
We bring today's fundraising to a close if we're successful in getting to the 750 members from this morning. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. We are going to count this down together. 4 minutes remaining, 31 members from whom we need to hear. If you put this off and you thought, they're going to be sure to get it, we are 31 members away with 4 minutes left. We need you to be one of the 7+ in this minute alone. KPCC.org.
Please don't put it off a second longer. This is your last chance to get in on this extremely important challenge. We can't afford to turn down this $25,000 from Gordon Crawford. You can't afford to allow us to turn down this money because it goes right back into the programming that you hear day in and day out. It's going to make your listening all the better.
27 members to go. 3.5 minutes remaining. We need every phone line filled. 866-888-5722. If you're in the car and you can safely drive, please do so now, but observe all laws and safety. 866-888-5722. Or via the web, if you can get to your computer, knock the person next to you down, get to the computer.
Ow.
KPCC.org.
23 members still to go in just the next 3 minutes of AirTalk today. Think of how much you rely upon KPCC and AirTalk day in and day out. Isn't that worth an additional $25,000? And you only have to pony up your share of that to make it happen.
We are so close, but the clock is ticking, and it's not slowing down for us or for you. Right now, your contribution vital. $25,000 hangs in the balance. A fundraising free afternoon and evening on KPCC is at stake. KPCC.org. 21 members to go. Just under three minutes remain. The clock is ticking.
$25,000 hanging in the balance. The challenge from Gordon Crawford, our board chair here at Southern California Public Radio, encouraging you to take the moment now to make your contribution. Whatever amount is right for you, that's the amount that works for us.
16 to go, Mindy. Oh, we are so close. $25,000, and this is for real. We don't get the funds if we don't fulfill it by noon. We have 2 minutes left. 2 minutes left in this challenge. We can do it. 16 members to go.
866-888-5722 or click and join online at kpcc.org. Look at all the ways we have to thank you for your support. Pick the one that's right for you, and then 2 to 3 minutes later, you will be a member of KPCC.
Join with Rita Baer of Palos Verdes Estates. She renews, as does Tammy Tunstall of Mission Viejo renews. Stacey Miller keeps her membership.